Welcome back to Embracing Your Mortality podcast with me, author Sue Brain. On the first day of the month, I posted an interview with someone who is inspiring us to live more consciously for a better world. And as I keep saying, my goodness me, we need all the help we can get these days. And this is why I'm so thrilled that my friend, colleague, and guest is Liz Rothschild. She's a performer and celebrant, an owner of the award-winning Westmill Woodland Burial Ground and mastermind of Kicking the Bucket Festival, which celebrates our relationship with living and dying. And Liz believes the two can't be separated, and I completely agree with her. And now in its fourth year, the Kicking the Bucket Festival will take place over the first weekend of November in and around Oxford. So make sure you sign up and find out more about it. And we'll talk about how you can do that at the end of the podcast. So welcome, Liz. I'm so excited that Kicking the Bucket Festival is back for another year. But what made you want to run a death and dying festival in the first place?
Oh, Sue, thank you for having me. I guess it was because of my work, and I sort of started being a celebrant, and then I was lucky enough to be able to set up a burial ground, and I thought, oh, great, you know, I can offer people the opportunity to really have the funeral that they want. And then I realised, oh, by the time they come to me, you know, a lot of the time anyway, the death's already happened. They may not have had the conversations that might have been helpful. They're desperate and upset and bombarded with information, and they actually can't find that space in their heads and their hearts to consider what might be possible. So they tend to go down the same track. So I thought, okay, we need to be doing death education. We need to be getting out there and trying to, you know, join many others. I'm not claiming by any means to be the only one, but the many brave people who for many years have been trying to get this conversation to come forward sooner. And that was it. And I guess the fusion for me around what kind of events we have is also that for me as a performer and theatre practitioner, I've always been passionate about how the arts can help us delve into places that we're not perhaps so familiar with and put ourselves in other people's shoes. And so the festival has a strong component of arts input, both exhibitions and singing and theatre and film, as well as panels, you know, discussion events and that kind of thing. So, yeah, trying to catch people from all angles.
Yeah, I mean, my experience of being to the last couple, actually, it's just such fun because that, and although the theme is death, it's such a sort of open way of just coming in and going, God, I never thought of it looking it like that, and this sort of sense of life is part of death. And I think that's
exactly
selling.
Yeah. Yes. And you know, it's wonderful. One of our bits of feedback was it's been the best 2 weeks of my life, which is my favourite bit of feedback.
I mean, isn't that just wonderful that somebody comes to a death and dying festival and goes, oh, that's the best 2 weeks of my life. But doesn't it show you the hunger that people have for education about death and dying? And do you think we're getting any better at it, Liz?
Yeah, I do, actually. I mean, I guess I'll come back to it in a minute. I guess the other bit I think about it is also it's about breaking the isolation down. So we'll carry all these thoughts and these fears and these ideas and these questions, but we don't quite know where they're welcome and where to bring them. And so an event like the festival or indeed your podcast, you know, it invites people to say it's OK, you know, come on in. The water's lovely, actually. You know.
Yeah, and it's a look of relief when people say what they want to say, but they've been afraid to say it in case they've upset somebody or it isn't politically correct about death and dying. Yeah, it's true.
Or yeah, they look weird, you know, for some reason or another. Yeah. And you said, are we getting better? And I think for sure we're getting better. It seems to me I can't open a newspaper without finding some article by somebody about death. Woman's Hour has covered it quite a lot. Radio 4, you know, there are lots of things on the radio, lots of podcasts. There's all the wonderful work like Griefcast, Carrie Lloyd, and the Death Festival organised by Dr. Lucy Selman. There's so much out there now. So I do feel the conversation's getting wider and not just a few kind of at the fringe anymore. And yet at the same time, you know, I had a funeral at my burial ground yesterday and lots of people coming up to me and saying, I didn't know you could do this. I didn't know this was possible. You know, so there's still always work to do.
I came across the Death Cafe movement and you were the person who actually encouraged me to run Death Cafes in the first place.
Yes.
And I think they've done an amazing job of opening up spaces for people to go and talk about death in whatever way that works for them. And that, you know, the fact that it's so unilateral, it's just so open. It doesn't matter who you are, what experiences you have, you're welcome.
Yes, you're absolutely right to bring them in. That initiative from the lovely John Underwood was an amazing one because, like all good ideas, it's totally simple, isn't it? You know, totally simple. And it's like we walk in and we've taken our mask off and we've said, yeah, we do actually want to talk about this stuff. And that's it. And off you go. Yeah. And it's interesting now, isn't it, Sue, how it's kind of almost finessed into two things. So now we have things called death cafes and then we have things called bereavement cafes. Yeah. And actually in the festival this year, we've got one of each. And I think that's been an interesting development too, because sometimes when you hold a death cafe, maybe it's been your experience too, that somebody will come who perhaps has been recently bereaved and they have a huge story. And they need so much space. And then it's quite hard to hold the balance between people who might have come just intrigued to talk about some stuff about death. And then this person with carrying all this pain and grief. And so I think the Bereavement Cafe has been a nice offshoot there where that's understood. That's the theme of the meeting.
Yeah, I think that's such an important point because that's certainly been my own experience as well is, you know, the Death Cafe is about talking about death. In whatever context that is, but grief is a whole, that's the product of somebody dying, and that's different from the death cafe. And I agree with you. I think these grief cafes are providing an incredibly important role for, because death cafes are not a therapeutic setting, you know,
exactly,
coming to have a chat about death and maybe sharing your story, of course, but grief is deep and dark and painful and, as you say, big stories.
Yes, but then, you know what, one of the things that I'm so excited about all the time is how people find different ways of working with their grief. And for everybody, the same, like in the festival this year, I'm really excited about the World Swimming event. You know, we've got this young woman, Kat White, whose solution to her own bereavement was to swim every day at dawn in Hinksey Lake in Oxford. And it was huge. And then she made a film about it because she's also a performer and she's going to be showing her film. She's delighted because she hasn't been back to Oxford with it, you know. And we've got a wild swimming expert coming as well. And that whole thing about our emotional well-being through swimming. And of course, there's a whole tranche of us who think, oh, don't take me anywhere near cold water. But I actually love it. I love it. Yeah, it's exciting to see that. And then, you know, from another angle, we've got the film Our Grief, Black Women Speak. And I'm so delighted that this year's festival is much more inclusive in those ways. It's been the intention for some time, but thanks to one of our festival organisers, Christine McKenzie, who's really taken this on, the representation is much, much better. And so this film is about the experience of middle-aged Black women, seven women being interviewed about their grieving journey and where it may have intersected also with racism. And then there's a conversation afterwards and poetry and drumming. And I love that fusion of an event, you know. So, yeah, so many different stories to tell.
That's such an interesting thing because in my own experience of running a lot of death cafes now, it has been very white based. And I was always being very conscious of opening that space up, but people, actually Black people not coming. There have been a few, absolutely, but not in the, I'd like to it to have been much more sort of integrated. But I think, again, it's just offering the opportunity or being in the right place or actually just making it known it's available and it's okay for them to come.
Well, I think but it's also significantly about who is in leadership.
Yes.
In an event. So that unless that also looks diverse, then I think the message will never entirely land. And I guess that's what we've been trying to do this time. And similarly, I mean, of course, you know, it's interesting with who comes to both my show and the festival is we also have a very much stronger representation from women. So there, you know, there are certain territories where perhaps
Liz, this is
people find it harder to go.
Right across the board with anything to do with our emotional well-being, it's the women who are turning up. There are a few men, and I always bless them when they come, but it's the women that are coming, that sort of hunger to know more, or that hunger to learn about themselves or to do things differently. But it's quite difficult with how to approach or encourage men to come, and maybe they need their own space as well.
Well, and that's all fascinating, isn't it? Because I know there was this thing that came out a while ago about the fact that a lot of theories around grief turned out to have been based on some research, which was essentially done with white middle-class women. And this was then applied across the board, and people wondered why it wasn't working, you know. And so things like men's sheds have been a wonderful development, haven't they? Saying, you know, yeah, actually, we want to do practical stuff, and then we might chat while we're waiting for the kettle to boil or while we're cutting off a bit of wood. You know, all these different ways of going about it.
Yeah. The man shed thing is absolutely, that's been, and also, you know, I think I'm not a man, so I don't know, but I think men do things differently from women a lot of the time. But grief is grief, isn't it? And it's about how to provide spaces for. It doesn't matter who you are, what gender you are, where you're coming from. That's the human experience you're going through. And it's jolly painful and frightening and confusing. And I think this is where, you know, your Kicking the Bucket Festival, which is the best name ever, comes in, provide an opportunity, at least for the Oxford area, to come and really chew the cud about it.
Well, and the great exciting thing this year is actually that we're online on Friday, because one of the big learnings from COVID, I think, was, you know, who's being excluded and who's not managing to get things and who would absolutely love to be there if they could access it. So we realized we didn't think we could run the festival again without that dimension. So all day Friday until the evening, which is a live event, we're in the hands of the lovely John Wilson from Online Events, and he is managing all the tech side of it. So wherever you are, please come and join us. And I also wanted to say, in fact, that the festival, the Hub Weekend, is the first one in November, but all through October, events are running around the city in Oxford, because we try to get people to stumble over us, because we know you won't, not everybody is looking for this. So we like to just pop up where they normally go. They go, oh, no. No, it's that darn festival again.
Liz, apart from this wonderful Kicking the Bucket Festival, which is a lot of fun for anybody who hasn't been before, come along, because it's really, really, you'll just learn a lot and enjoy it hugely. I just want to talk to you about your burial ground, because people don't know about that either. Just give me a little bit of history about it and where the vision is going now.
Yes. So the history is that there I was being a celebrant and feeling like I wanted a place where there was all the time in the world and where people could do exactly what they wanted to do and where nature could help with the healing. And I'm very lucky because my partner's a farmer, and one of our fields had been planted for biomass for the local power station. And then in the end, they didn't use it. And so it was kind of out of the farm's rotation. And he really kindly let me set up what is a community interest company, Burial Ground. So we're a not-for-profit business, part of the Natural Burial Ground Association, part of the Natural Death Centre. And it's so beautiful. Again and again, people, you know, feedback. Just this funeral I mentioned yesterday, you know, a very sad occasion with a young mum having died with young children. And they were all setting up and getting it decorated in the roundhouse before everybody started to arrive. And I arrived and the kids were totally excited because they said, we've seen a mouse. we've seen a mouse. Because the last time they came up, I'd been pointing out the owl pellets to them. And then they showed me the video. And then, in fact, it was even more exciting because it was a stoat. So we had a whole conversation about the fact this was, in fact, a stoat. So this is all going on just before the funeral starts, you know. And I see children coming to visit the burial ground, and they literally leap out of the car because they want to come here, because this is a place where life is going on as well as death, and where they might see a stoat or a robin or a kite or the latest, you know, orchid to come into flower or whatever it is. So nature is just soothing and calming. And somebody also themselves came up and said almost that exactly. They said, I've never been at a funeral where I sat in the outdoors. And it was so comforting. You know, they were listening to the bird song and they were looking at the view and they were just being soothed. So I feel like half my work is done by just Mother Nature, you know, being there.
Nature, being there. She does it every time, doesn't she? I have to say the best funeral I've ever been to, and I do bang on about it, was my friend Lucinda. And she arrived in the back of a Land Rover, and then she had a woven coffin, and she just asked everyone who came and bought flowers from the garden. We put them on the top of her garden. There was no false flowers, nothing from the supermarket. And then there wasn't even a celebrant. It was just her nephew just said, does anybody want to say anything? So we all stood around the hole in the ground with her in it. And we all said something about her. And then that was it. We all went to the pub.
Happiness.
It was absolutely one of the most wonderful experiences. And I want to go and be buried next door to her.
Oh,
I do. Yeah. I just thought it was such an inspiring thing. And as you say, and she used to love birds. And just as we were all doing our little chat, this beautiful buzzard flew over. And you just think, that's Lucinda. She's come to say hello.
Absolutely. I mean,
isn't it? Which you don't get in a church and you don't get in a grim creme.
Over and over again, people will see a butterfly or the light will suddenly shaft down. And, you know, it's beautiful. But the other thing in what you said there that I love is the thing about coming up to the coffin, touching the coffin and placing things on the coffin. I love to see it when people close that distance between the person, because, you know, it's extraordinary, isn't it? You can have been looking after somebody, caring for them maybe for months, and then suddenly, whoop, you know, depending on how it goes, they're whisked away, and then it's all very remote. And so whenever you can close the distance, I think it's a really great thing. And whenever that happens in one of our funerals, you can feel the relaxation, you know, the kind of softening, and just that chance, that last chance, just to put your hand on the coffin and reach out.
It's a kind of heartfelt goodbye, isn't it? When you do that, when you're just present and there isn't sort of, you know, this sort of formal sort of ceremony or whatever it is. It just feels, you know, from the earth we arrive from to the earth we go back, you know, as dust to dust, ashes to ashes, and it does feel like that.
Yeah,
that natural thing. I just want to talk to you more about this natural phenomena that tends to happen when somebody dies. I find this absolutely fascinating. This is cosmology in the dying process. Just for anybody who's listening, I'm doing my MA in the cosmology and astrology MA, and I'm really interested in writing a dissertation into the cosmology of the dying process. And I'm just curious about what that means. And I think it is things like the ray of light happening or the butterfly appearing. What do you think?
So I never know how to place those things, in the sense that what I notice is they happen a lot. But what I also am aware of is that I think people are in an acute sense of heightened awareness because they're tuned into something very significant that's happening. And so they're sensitive in a different way. So I'm not sure. For me, you know, I've got to be honest, I don't know whether something quite specific is arriving or whether they are consciously noticing and attaching that meaning. I don't know which it is, but what I do know is it's beautiful and it brings enormous comfort.
And it's meaningful, isn't it?
That's totally. It's
massive. Powerful.
They nearly always find something from what has unfolded. You know, it's beautiful. It was when you were talking also about the touching and the coffin, and we were talking about that. I wanted to say the other thing that happens with us a lot is we have people involved with bearing and lowering. And I'm really passionate about what that can mean to people too. There's something literally about bearing the weight. You know, it's somatic. I think our bodies need to understand what's happened in a certain way. You know, and so when, I mean, obviously not everybody can do that, but when the closest people are involved in bearing and lowering, if they want to be, and it's definitely not required or anything, but if they want to be, I see that they derive a lot of comfort from that, actually.
Yeah, I've never done that. I've been next to a coffin, especially with my dad, but I've never felt a coffin on my shoulder. And actually, it's something I need to do.
You don't even have to have it on your shoulder either. I have a big thing about that because, you know, the reason about shoulder, I mean, it's great if you're covering over long distances, but it does mean all your bearers have got to be roughly the same height for it all to make sense. So there is a way to do it with sort of webbing and holding to the side. We have a lovely beer which makes life very simple for people, so they only have to do a little bit of it carrying to and fro, and then they wheel down on this beautiful cart, and that's you know, lovely in itself, and everybody follows behind.
It's such a opening ceremony, isn't it? Ceremony is not the right word. It's ritual, stepping into the heart of ritual to say goodbye, which I don't think a lot of people do in church or necessarily in crematoriums, because there's sort of this other going on. But when you're in nature doing it like that, it is an extraordinary experience.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And people are more connected with each other, I think. Sometimes in some funerals, you can feel like you're receiving something, you know, from the front, as it were. Yeah. But often there's more sense of interconnectedness, you know, be it when everybody's writing a message or as you talked about putting flowers on the coffin or whatever it is, people are milling around, they're relating to each other. It's a different sense.
It's this sort of coming back into the fact we're all connected, isn't it? Rather than we're all individual. I mean, you know, I think that's the saddest thing about our Western society is this sort of sense of separation. And within that context, people become terrified of dying or death or talking about death or this, you know, that this is all going to come to an end. But when we know that we're interconnected and nature provides that lesson for us, it just changes everything. Certainly did for me when I went to Lucinda's funeral.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, absolutely. And views, you know, it's very interesting having perspective also, because funnily enough, you know, we have a friends and family group and we meet at various events through the year and we ask for questions and feedback and comment and so on. And we were planning originally to cover the whole thing in native woodland, so it would become a small wood. And the feedback came, which we have followed, because they were right. They said, if we cover the whole site in trees, we won't be able to see the view. And our view is up to the beautiful ancient downs and the Uffington White Horse. And it's a marker point for people in our locality. It's like one of those geographical touchstones. You see the White Horse on the train, you're nearly home, you know. And I realized, God, they're right. You know, we have to keep that openness. And now we're kind of keeping an open view that will run from our roundhouse right up to the edge of the site and up, because we also need that, don't we? Like, that's why we want to go and go to the top of a hill and sit down and think a few thunks, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, it's this sort of opportunity to get out of our own head when you're in nature and this is happening as part of a natural ritual, because death isn't, it's just as natural as being born. You can't have one without the other, as you say, you know, for the death festival. And I think it's that we've totally connected with birth, maybe overly, and now we've disconnected with death. This the great cycle of life, which is there's only one thing that's going to happen when you're born. You're going to die. End of. At some point.
Well, in fact, it's lovely this time because one of the festival organisers and another person are running an event. So Wendy is a deaf doula and she was a nurse, and she's running it with Kirsten Baker, who was a midwife and taught midwife. And they are talking about the multiple connections between birth and death. I think it's going to be a lovely workshop there. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think the death cafes have done a lot, but again, it's how do we bring those two together, that this understanding that, you know, when you're born, you're going to die. And this is a journey. This is a, you know, we're on this journey of human experience. And I think when we shift our perspective from I'm so important, my life is so important, I'm never going to die, you know, to this understanding that we're just part of a natural cycle of evolution, I think it helps.
I agree. And it's interesting, isn't it, because it's absolutely diametrically the opposite from, I don't know if you've heard any of the series by Alex Grotowski on Radio 4 called The Immortals.
No,
but it's about, you know, the group of it is largely incredibly wealthy tech sort of giants in the States whose mission is to achieve immortality.
Oh,
that
yes.
That is their goal, you know, is to pour
huge
amounts of money into
Alcor. It's the Alcor Foundation. Yeah.
That is literally the antithesis of where I think I'm trying to head here. But it is the logical outcome of the way we've been thinking a lot in Western culture, isn't it? You know, staving off old age, trying to look eternally young, you know, now. Yeah.
It's a kind of, well, for me, it's a kind of sickness. It's a soul sickness. You know, there's something that has massively disconnected. And I think if people are desperately investing, I know billionaires are investing in this. Mm-hmm. There is something so ego driven that you are stepping out of the natural law, LORE, by the way, of nature. And that really concerns me.
Yeah, that you're so significant that you need to survive.
Yeah.
I mean, that lovely children's story, I mean, and adult story, Death in a Nut, it's got it there, right there, hasn't it? It's just that beautiful story of that young man who wants to try and keep death away from his mother, and he manages to stuff death into a little nut and throw him away. And then everything starts to go wrong. You know, the animals won't be slaughtered, the carrots can't be cut, you know, because everything has to die. And why would humans be an exception to that?
Well, we're not, because we are part of nature, and we've just forgotten this sort of sense of separation. This is why I love what you're doing. You know, the Kicking the Bucket Festival brings us back into relationship with this natural great cycle of life and death, and gives us an opportunity to come together with each other, actually, to talk about this and to share it. Nobody's an expert in death and dying, are they? Because we haven't died yet.
But no.
At least we can share what we know or what we understand of it together. Yeah. That helps.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Righty-ho. So is there anything else that you would like to say about the festival or the work that you do as a celebrant? Just to give us a piece of advice.
I could mention my books.
Yes, please. Liz, have you written any books?
I am, as a matter of fact. Well, I was thinking of it because, you know, you were talking about how we can learn from each other. And I guess that I tour this one woman show called Outside the Box, a live show about death. And at the end of it, over the years, I have always wanted my audience to share with me their own experiences and observations and stories. And they've written them down, and I sort of put them on the website under the venue, and I stash the little cards in a shoebox under my bed and then in two shoeboxes. And then I thought, God, you know, these stories are incredible, because people have got all sorts of contradictory truths to share. You know, they're funny stories there, sad stories there, angry stories there, informative, they're all sorts. And so that led to a book and to broadening out the themes within that book. And indeed, you, Sue, you contributed a story to Death as a Teacher, which is the last chapter. You know, how can death teach us about life, really? So I you know, I think stories and storytelling and story sharing are so, so valuable. And I hope that book can be a resource. And then that led to one on COVID because, you know, with a similar kind of structure with expert commentary and resources, because the book went to print just during lockdown, in fact, so we couldn't really absorb the full implications of what we were uncovering through COVID about ourselves as individuals and ourselves as a society, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah. So where can people get these books from? Is it just...
I would say go to PCCS, the publishers, because you get them cheaper that way. And
they can find that on your website, Liz?
My website is, for that sort of thing, is www.fullcircleproductions.org.uk.
Brilliant.
But also, it's you know, will be mentioned at the Kicking the Festival, which is www.kickingthefestival.co.uk, and it also is on social media, Instagram, Facebook, X.
Well, I still can't get my head around that, but never mind. Liz, I'm so looking forward to it. I'm going to be there at the Kicking the Bucket Festival supporting Liz. So
more than supporting, serious contributing to our lovely event, which is called Speed Dating with Death.
Yes.
Which is always great fun. That's on the Saturday morning. And you get to hear 7 different experts speaking, and then you get to have a chance to speak to them individually if you want to, and then we will have lunch, so there's more chance to continue the conversation or catch up with somebody whose brain she didn't manage to pick. So yeah, we're really looking forward to having you with us, Sue.
And I remember from last time it's 3 minutes, isn't it?
You got 7.
Oh, we've got 7 minutes, but
yeah, start preparing.
So I'm really looking forward to that. That's the kind of thing that the Kicking the Bucket does. It makes it fun, talking about death and dying fun. Liz, thank you so much for coming on, and I'm so looking forward to it. And yes, we'll see each other in November with hopefully lots of people there as too.
Thank you, Sue.
That was Liz Rothchild. You can find out all the information about Kicking the Bucket Festival through kickingthebucketfestival.co.uk, and we both look forward to seeing you there. My December guest is Paula Cannell, international speaker and bee expert, and also head beekeeper at the wonderful Newt in Somerset. Paula runs bee safaris to educate people about the importance of these amazing, life-providing, buzzy creatures. So thanks for listening, and see you with Paula next time. Bye for now.